What's up, everybody? You are listening to the Credentials Unscripted podcast. I am your host, Matt Sternberg, and we've got another phenomenal episode for you today. We're talking with Rob Bulow, who's the Vice President and General Manager of Education at Vector Solutions, and we're talking about how to credential durable skills. What do we mean by durable skills? It's really the things that you learn outside of the classroom during your college experience, right? So think about all the work that the Student Affairs Office does, all the things that are outside of the classroom. So your transcript is really not a very good descriptor of your college experience. So how do we begin to tell the story of who you are as a college student after graduation, right? What's the holistic view of what you've learned and who you are? And how do we get students to be able to tell that story a little bit better about what their college experience meant, which is important because college is currently under question, right? Is it worth all the money that you spend to go to college? How does it translate? And so engaging with student affairs, talking about these other skills that you're building during your college experience is more critical than ever before. And we'll dig into that with Rob in detail. He's a really smart guy. I had a lot of fun in this conversation. So without further ado, let's get to our conversation with Rob. All right. I am here with Rob Bulow, Vice President and General Manager of Education at Vector Solutions. Rob, how are you?
I am glad to be here, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing good. So I guess a good place to start would be, tell us a little bit about your role and about Vector Solutions.
Yeah, for sure. So, a little about me, I am passionate about the intersection between technology, education, and social impact. My academic training is in public health. I've spent the last 19 years working on or with colleges and universities. 12 of those have been in ed tech companies like Vector Solutions, where we're working with 2,000 colleges and universities and 7,000 K-12 schools and districts. That's about half of all of the education institutions in the country. And as the general manager of our education sector, I'm responsible for making sure that all the functional areas of our company are rowing towards our mission of making schools safer, smarter, and better. And the impact that we're able to make is incredible at that scale. In higher ed alone, we're reaching 10 million student, staff, and faculty every year with evidence-based digital trainings on topics like sexual assault, alcohol and substance misuse, harassment, discrimination, career readiness, mental well-being, belonging, hazing. These are issues that impact lives. And the data that we're providing back to schools on the efficacy of these programs and the insights on where they should focus more resources truly help them strengthen both their mission and their overall institutional effectiveness. And that's really where I've been most interested the last few years, that connection between mission alignment and student success. I'm sure everybody listening knows there's been a ton of turbulence in academia of late, both on issues of campus safety and well-being, as well as the overall health, the business of higher education, and whether college is worth it anymore. And to be clear, for the record, I am a firm believer that it is worth it, but not without some real transformation around who we are, what we do, and why it matters.
So that's a really good way to kind of set the table, right? I'm pro-college too. You're pro-college. I think the majority of people that went to college are pro-college, right? And the funny thing, when you and I spoke earlier, we're talking about like, well, why are we pro-college? You know, it's expensive. It's a big time commitment. And what is it about college, the unique experience of college, that makes it valuable, right? It's not just the actual in-classroom learning. And that's what's really interesting to me about Vector Solutions. Because as you highlighted, we've got all of these challenges in higher ed. Help me define the college experience and the work that all of you are doing to encompass all that it means to go to college, graduate. And then I want you to connect it to the missional aspect of what a university or a college needs to do.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, looking at the title of this podcast, we're talking about durable skills. And so there's a word in there, durable, that I'm going to focus on. And there's a word you said, Matthew, of experience. I think those are two things that are part and parcel of each other. I think it is the experience of college that makes it durable in the face of unprecedented challenges, declining enrollment, rising costs, increased competition, questions of value and relevance. You know, as we've got more and more disruption happening and more competition, even within the academy of institutions competing against themselves for a now dwindling pool of students, the way that schools need to position the differentiated value of the product that they are offering, it's not just the diploma, the credential, it is the experience. We are not just shaping minds and building skills. We are shaping characters and creating conscientious global citizens. That's the mission of college. And that's what makes me really excited. And that's what's going to make higher education never go away. But it is that mission, it is that experience that we need to lean into more, especially as we start talking about things like pathways to getting the jobs that students want today.
So I like the way you framed it up in terms of the durability of higher education. So tell me the skills and competencies that we should be focused on that we're not focused on.
So if you'll allow me, Matthew, let me tangent to your question for just a moment. And so, you know, going back to those macro challenges that the industry's facing, you know, the pressure on higher education is tremendous right now as more and more people question the value and relevance of a college degree. And that's evidenced in a lot of ways. Enrollment's been declining since 2010. The percent of high school students considering a bachelor's degree went from 71% in 2020 to 51% in 2022. Not going to college on TikTok has millions of views. More Americans are seeing value in a Google internship over a Harvard degree. In 2023, more colleges than ever before in the history of higher education shuttered their doors. And for those that are still coming to college, only 26% of U.S. adults who have experienced higher education strongly agree that their coursework's relevant to their work and day-to-day life. So from a business lens, our customers, our students, are dissatisfied with the product we are selling, a degree. And there's a huge push to align the curricula of degree programs to practical job skills. And there's growing momentum around career readiness training, around work-based learning, internships and apprenticeships and other co-curricular opportunities to provide students with experiences that are going to make them more employable. And I am all for that, establishing technical skills, experiential learning. But one of the tragic downsides of this predicament that we're in higher education is that liberal arts and humanities programs are increasingly on the chopping block as colleges are looking for ways to balance their budgets. So my story, I got my Bachelor of Arts in Psychology at Penn State. And to be honest, I never really thought about my job and career after college until probably my junior year. I wasn't interested in counseling psychology or research. So I started taking classes in industrial organizational psychology, thinking that that sounded good. That would make me a little bit more employable. But I had no idea what I wanted to do until I took Intro to Women's Studies. That class changed the trajectory of my life, and I never would have taken it if I didn't have the elective credits of being a liberal arts major. I ended up getting involved in a men's peer education program focused on sexual assault prevention. And for the first time in my life, I found something I was passionate about. I became a leader of the group, managed meeting agendas and budgets, did a ton of public speaking. And I realized now I was building skills like interpersonal communication, empathy, critical and analytical thinking, cultural competence. These are often dubbed soft skills, but I much more prefer human skills or durable skills. And they're a big focus for us at Vector Solutions. So happy to talk more about how we're honing in on those skills and the credentials demonstrating those skills. But that's how I think about what college can do. That's what I think about when I think about the non-technical, non-specifically vocation-related skills.
I wonder if there is just the cost of college has risen exponentially. And I wonder if that has just created this pressure for you have to know what you're going to do. You have to have this exact pathway and has been at the detriment of liberal arts, right? Of seeing college as this 4 to 6 years where you can discover what you want to do, kind of slow roll your way to figuring out who you are and the types of things you want to invest in. But because the cost of college is so great, we have this pressure to know exactly how it's going to translate and pay itself back, basically. And I think that's a real tragedy because I had a similar story to you, right? I was like undeclared for several years, really didn't know what I wanted to do. But that's kind of part of the experience, right? Like that's part of the value is the figuring out. And I think we've changed it to the value is more transactional, which I understand given the cost of college, right? Like, am I going to pay $300,000 to be making $40,000 out of college? That's a hard trade-off for a lot of people, right? So I get it, but I think that's a real shame. But yeah, tell us about the work that you're doing with Vector Solutions and the credentials and the things that you're focused on.
Yeah, no doubt. It is a shame, as you're saying, Matthew, that we are commoditizing the experience, that we are making college much more transactional. And look, like the macro environment is not helping us right now. So the growing trend of employers dropping the requirement of a college degree for entry-level jobs, the number of non-degree credentials is fast approaching the number of bachelor degrees conferred every year. And yes, skills in AI and big data are getting a lot of buzz and a lot of focus, but it's durable skills that employers continue citing as some of the most important in prospective hires. So we're talking about leadership. We're talking about adaptability and resilience. We're talking about creative and analytical thinking, empathy, curiosity, cultural awareness, emotional IQ. The problem is twofold. Hiring managers don't know how to assess these skills, and job candidates or students don't know how to articulate them. I haven't yet heard of a perfect interview question that gives a fulsome perspective on the durable skills that's going to make someone an asset to an organization and show their potential for growing into a leader. And by the way, I'm open to emails on the back end of this podcast for suggestions of better interview questions I should be asking. But there are a lot of spaces and places where we're helping build these durable skills in students, both inside and outside the classroom, but we're seldom giving a student the language to talk about what they learned. And a transcript simply isn't.
And absent of that, of them really having a clear way to communicate it. What is, like, take a job interview, for instance. You're like, everyone's going to say, I work hard. I'm, you know, like they all just blend together at that point because we don't have a good way to describe it. So we just rely on someone either describing themselves or
they have to interpret. We don't have, right.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking about still developing minds that haven't, in the case of a quote unquote traditional age college student, like they don't know the work environment and how an employer needs to hear that this skill is valuable. So we're putting a lot on the student and we're charging them a lot to not give them a really, really clear and specific value proposition for these durable skills, for these human skills, for these quote unquote soft skills. And I think that's where badges and micro-credentials can add real value. So a rigorously validated micro-credential can clearly demonstrate acquired competencies around digital skills, around durable skills. The metadata that is in a badge or a credential kind of takes that interpretation work out of the equation on both sides. The hiring manager can see the criteria that was used to confer this micro-credential. And all of the descriptions of the competencies and skills should make it really clear what this learner, this credential acquirer got out of that experience.
And I think it's a really cool way for an institution to prioritize what they care about from a missional perspective. So we all sense this and we've all done hiring where, hey, students from this college, they just seem like a good fit. You know, they seem to have a greater ability to listen, to be a public speaker, to manage people. Like, oh, that college really churns out people that feel like they're a really good fit for our organization. but it's hard to define, right? We're just kind of making correlations rather than actually having kind of the data or the way to describe it. And this actually allows an institution to say, here's what we care about. Here's kind of the proof points. Here are the actual kind of learning outcomes for it. And to differentiate itself from other institutions, right? Here's what a Grand Valley State University student, here's like kind of the ethos of what we're trying to instill in them versus a Calvin College or Calvin University student, that type of thing. So to plug my own institution that I went to, but there needs to be differences, right? And I think it's cool for an institution to be able to focus on the things that they want their students to be, because branding in higher ed is critical, right? They're all trying to differentiate themselves. Here's what your experience will look like. Here's what we care about. And I think this further enables an institution to do that.
I think there's two things that we'll probably keep talking about in the next few minutes. So one is just the more proximal preparation for careers. And two is the way that student affairs and these sort of unlikely spaces and places are providing value that both today's learners want and tomorrow's employers need. So, you know, starting with the first one, and it goes back to the disruption and the competition facing higher ed. And it's not just against other institutions. It's the Google Career Certificates. It's Amazon's Machine Learning University. These signify pathways to in-demand, high-paying jobs for a fraction of the cost of a college degree. But as we talked about really early on, what these programs don't do is the thing that makes higher education uniquely differentiated. Yes, we have classroom and co-curricular offerings that expand knowledge and skills, but it is that experience that's not just shaping minds, but shaping characters. And so I think our call to action as an industry is we need to start being a lot more explicit about the many ways that we're investing in the acquisition of technical, vocational, and durable skills, both inside and outside the classroom. And that's been a part of our focus at Vector Solutions. We recently released a student training called Leadership and Career Readiness. So this includes modules covering everything from communication and vision to servant leadership and empathy to modeling good behaviors and effective decision making. And the title of the course and the corresponding credential make it abundantly clear what the value and the outcome is. And we're seeing schools use these modules in first year experience programs or practicum seminars. So that's a proximal example of an outside the classroom opportunity to use technology to help provision these schools, to help provide the credential and the talking points to differentiate a student in the hiring pool. But there are so many more programs and activities provided to students that are simply not being curricularized or positioned as skill building opportunities. So you mentioned Calvin University. You went there for your undergrad, got your master's at Northwestern, right? I'm certain you had to participate in prevention and compliance trainings on topics related to safety, well-being, and inclusion. Tell me I'm wrong, but I'm almost certain that was part of your experience. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
You loved them. They were great. Yes, I hear the enthusiasm. So many of our customers are using these programs pre-matriculation. So it's literally one of the first engagements a student has with their school. And if we position these as just check the box requirements, that's what they're going to be for students. Seems like you might have had that, like, hey, Matthew, you're required to go through this training and you better do it or you can't register for classes. And if that's how we're positioning it, that's how it's going to be received. There's not going to be enthusiasm. And there's certainly not going to be a bigger, broader connection. Even if we talk about the investment that my school's making in my well-being on campus, that's still, that positioning has a shelf life of the 2 to 4 to 6 years that someone's spending on our physical institution. But think about a program like sexual assault prevention. When you're talking about consent or bystander intervention, what you're really talking about is interpersonal communication, ethical decision-making, empathy. When you talk about promoting mental well-being, we know that that is a huge, like, top presidential priority for colleges and universities. What you're talking about, if you're really trying to get ahead of these issues, is adaptability, self-management skills, resilience. Diversity and inclusion programs are about intercultural fluency, creating communities where everyone feels like they belong. I think everyone's probably starting to make the connections here, right? Those are really powerful skills, but very few schools are explicitly making that connection to their learners. And for many of them, they're reaching almost all of their students with these programs. So student affairs is really an unsung hero in the provisioning of some of the most important, durable skills that are going to make students successful in their careers and communities. And you're damn right, Matthew, it is branding that matters in how we're telling that story.
And you and I talked about this earlier too, which is like, think about all of the classes you took in college, university. How much of the actual information do you remember or do you use, right? And so going back to your original point, which is like, we have this struggle in higher ed. It's this transaction. People want to get something back, want to figure out exactly what I'm going to get out of going to college. And we have all these other credentialing avenues popping up, different types of pathways. But the durability, and the reason I love when you say durable skills, is because the premise is, well, can't I just get a certificate outside of college and get this next job? Well, that might be a job I want next year. What's the work that I want to do 10 years, 15 years? Like, the idea that someone will know exactly what they want to do will never change and shift. Yes, having a pathway, knowing exactly where you want to end up is great. But that to me is a luxury, right? Of course, it's better not to waste time taking classes you won't need towards your degree. Pathways are important. And there's a lot of research that suggests, like for community college students, like, hey, what classes do you need to take to get to 4 years so that you can graduate on time? Like, all of that is great. But at the same point, I think it's a fallacy that we can just say, hey, what's that next job you want? What's the quickest path to get there? The durable skills will help me no matter what I do, right? If I want to change and shift, right? They're going to stick with me. And that to me is really the critical element here, right? We're so intent on what's the pathway and we're not thinking actually long-term. We're thinking about the next stop in the journey. And the durability piece really sticks with me because it's like, no, what's the thing I can take with me no matter where I go? You did hit on a few things, the economy and the utility of these types of credentials, right? How does a learner describe what they know, how well they know it? And then for employers to actually ask for this information, all of that stuff. So it's a chicken and the egg problem, Rob, right? How do we actually, let's say you're doing the good work of helping student affairs, credential, and hopefully learners have a better idea of what they've learned and the development that they've gone through. But how do we actually begin to get people to care? Like, how do we actually make this a better economy for these types of skills? Because I guarantee you, I apply for a job today, they're not like, send me all of your soft skill credentials. You know what I mean? So like, how do we actually begin to solve this problem where no one's asking for it at this point? How do we actually go about doing that?
So much to reflect on.
Can you solve this in 30 seconds or less, Rob? No.
Can I give you any response in 30 seconds or less, Matthew? No. Probably not. But back to the durability piece, like I want to like put a fine point on, like, it's durability in so many ways, right? It's durability in the fact that the technical skills might be the foot in the door to the job, but it is these human skills that are going to be the pathway for growth once you get in the door. And I'll say, you know, to the question you're asking now, like, the durability is also there in what employers are saying they want in prospective, often entry-level hires. You know, you look at the key skills coming out of the World Economic Forum every year, LinkedIn top job skills, right? Like, no matter where you look, there is durability in durable skills being on that list, right? And of course, like, the other flavors of the day might change to the AI, to the big data, but these continue to be major hiring criteria priorities for employers. And so you pan out and you look at the space and like the proliferation of badges and micro credentials. And I agree with you, there is still a real signal to noise disconnect of the amount of stuff in the system. I almost said gunk in the system, and maybe perhaps I should have, but there's so much in the credential space, and so little of it has been sort of the signal that got picked up by the employer to say, yes, that micro-credential, that badge has value. I am more likely to hire a student with that criteria. That's the nut that we have to crack. But I think higher education is the place to do it, because up until pretty recently, that credential that said, yes, that was simply a diploma. And, you know, certainly the value of that diploma might have differed based on the institution and the name that was on it. But that was sort of the foot in the door or the door opener for higher education graduates. And so I do feel like colleges and universities are well positioned as the pipeline to, you know, future leaders of our companies, of our country. I think we need to be working really closely with the private sector to talk about what their expectations are, to talk about how they can codify, how we can quantifiably and qualitatively show that what we're doing is going to make someone more effective, certainly help our learners tell that story. But I do disagree, though, that employers aren't asking for this. They are, but they're not looking to a credential yet to be part of the answer. And I think that's the nut we have to crack.
Yeah. And the way that they're asking for it is not verifiable in any way, right? Typically, it's like you might get it through different means. You might have someone do a writing sample or references or something on your resume, but there's really no verifiable way to get that information. Yeah. And to give kind of credence to what we're talking about here, like this has been a topic in higher ed. This isn't like a new thing. This is, over the last many years, what have a lot of offices talked about? A comprehensive learner record. We know what the problem is. The problem is partially, we really, when you graduate from college, people really don't have a very good idea of what you know and how well you know it, right? The transcript is an inside baseball document. It doesn't really communicate a lot about me. And the degree is binary, right? Like either have one or I don't. It doesn't really say a whole lot. So the comprehensive learner record, the movement in higher ed, is a way to say, how do we actually describe the experience outside of the classroom for the student, right? So many universities have pursued this. It's, hey, I, you know, had a semester abroad. I took this internship. I was involved in these student activities or clubs. And so gathering that data is always a challenge for institutions, but they're working hard with student affairs, to your point, so that we have all of these credentials or badges potentially that then can roll up into something more comprehensive so that it is easier for students to communicate and easier for someone to consume, right? Because I think that is one of the challenges that we're going to run into. Whereas if we have, you know, 100 different types of credentials, it becomes kind of lost in the noise, right, of what all these things mean. So I think there is going to be, okay, we credential them, we make it digital, great. We want students to understand them, fantastic. How do we make it just really easy to transfer this information to the parties that are interested in it? And I think that's going to continue to be something that's innovated on.
Yeah. I mean, if you keep the sort of metaphor, we don't even need to be that abstract about it. You know, we think about our students as customers. We think about this premium product that we're selling of a diploma and the experience. Like, what do you expect when you pay a lot of money for a product? You expect, you know, world-class customer experience and customer support. And so I think to the, you know, comprehensive learner records and the curricularizing of the fulsome experience, like that's got to be the way that we're recruiting students. That's got to be the first thing that we're talking to them about in orientation programs, is how to do college with intention. Because I hear consistently now that it's really less about where you went and that you went to college. It's how you went to college. And so how do administrators help shape the way our students are doing college and recognizing that there are these systems and structures of comprehensive learner records that they should be making deposits into regularly and thinking about as the long tail value of what they're doing in the next 4 years. And I know certainly that that was not part of my experience in undergrad or even in early days in graduate school. You know, my first advisor was telling me I should take classes that I was passionate about. And, you know, I was passionate about sexual violence prevention, but that wasn't what I wanted to do as the entirety of my career. And it wasn't until I got advised and I'm like, look, Rob, you're going to graduate from the Harvard School of Public Health. People are going to expect that you know how to lead. So tell me about your ability to manage a budget. Have you ever taken a class on that? Do you understand how to work an assets and liabilities spreadsheet? No. That was the advising that I got that finally clicked for me. That like, oh, like there's this whole world of skills and competencies that I'm going to be expected to have, and I don't. So I think the customer experience side of it really matters, and the support that we get as customers, as students, matters too.
So durable skills, engaging with the student affairs office, thinking about how we can help students communicate their experience, investing in these durable skills, which are really the differentiator of higher ed. Rob, what else should we have talked about that we haven't talked about yet?
I'm going to do my swan song here, hat tipping to all my student affairs colleagues out there, and say, here's the equation that we need to be better at articulating, particularly at the practitioner administrator level of student affairs. Then you come into these roles because you've got so much passion for the work that you're doing. And I was once at a conference, it was a student affairs conference, and you know, I was talking about like essentially the thing that allows student affairs professionals to persist in the face of really big challenges. And it is that passion. But he went on to say that like institutions of higher education have interests. And how do we articulate the interests of higher education? So it's not to say that, you know, your boss's boss, the president, chancellor, provost of a college or university don't care about mission, don't care about the well-being of students, staff, and faculty, don't care about safety and communities of belonging. They absolutely do. But what they are held accountable to on paper by trustees, by the general public, is recruiting students and filling seats, recognizing that's one of the main value streams of the finances of a university. They want to make students academically successful. They want to engage them in their learning process because they know that's going to help a student persist. So retention and graduation rates are huge. It costs so much money to refill a seat of a student that left your institution, either because they stopped out, dropped out, transferred to another school. And then, you know, how are we placing students and preparing them for their lives after college? So, okay, that's the equation of the business of higher education. You think about each of those steps in the student life cycle, and safety, well-being, inclusion, student affairs is central at each of those steps in the process. So, you know, think about Gen Z, young people today. They are socially conscious. They're activism oriented. They're making consumer decisions based on their values. That includes the, you know, branded jeans that they buy, where they shop for their groceries, and whether or not they go to your college. And so they are looking for you to tell them the ways you're meeting their expectations. We did a survey of graduating high school seniors a few years ago. Matthew, 83% of them said that safety, well-being, and inclusion were as important as academic rigor when deciding where they wanted to go to college. So how are schools using their marketing and communications divisions to tell that story to prospective students? And then you get them on campus, and what are the big factors that are causing a student to drop out of an institution or transfer to another institution or to do poorly in the classroom? We know that students who experience sexual violence are significantly more likely to leave your institution. Students who misuse or abuse alcohol or substances, significantly more likely to get behind in schoolwork, do more poorly on assignments, consider dropping out, actually leaving your institution. Students that don't feel like they belong aren't going to be fully engaged in that experience of college, right? So we know it's connected to academic success. There is, in our data, when we quantify the quality of a school's kind of prevention or well-being strategy, it is linearly connected to first-year retention rates and four-year on-time graduation rates. So much so in the statistical model that is nearly predictive that the better you do safety, well-being, and belonging work, the more likely you're going to have students persist at your institution. And then, of course, the durable skills that come out of all of these, you know, safety and wellness programs. It's a totally different value prop that is directly aligned to the product that our customers are buying, the experience, the diploma, the comprehensive learner record, and what employers want. That's the language that we need to use. That's the value prop that's going to take student affairs from being a cost center and the first place that we go to cut budgets to being an innovation and investment center in higher education. And that's what I truly believe that we are.
Rob, that's a great way to end. So if you are in student affairs and you found this conversation interesting, check out Vector Solutions. I'm sure they'd love to talk to you. I don't know what rob.com is. I can't sign off on it, but Rob, thank you so much. I really appreciated our conversation, learned a lot, and thanks for joining me.
It was a pleasure.
So that is our episode with Rob Bulow from Vector Solutions. Thanks again to Rob for joining us. He's a really smart guy, really enjoyed our conversation. And it is interesting when you think about how do we actually describe the college experience, right? It's an expensive proposition to go to college, but we know it is so much more than just the classes and courses that you take. So how do we begin to describe that better? How do we arm students with what they know, right? And how do we actually equip them to translate to future employers? For instance, here's what I learned in college kind of outside of the classroom. So engaging with student affairs is a really interesting topic in the fight to maintain its relevance, its trust from the community, all those types of things. So very interesting conversation. Check out our previous episodes. We just released one a few weeks ago on stackable credentials, one on micro credentials. So if you're into credential innovation, some cool stuff there. Our next episode is, I don't have it fully confirmed yet, but I think it's going to be on AI with a really cool guest. So stay tuned. I think that'll be it. And then we also referenced a lot of studies and some data in the podcast with Rob, and we really wanted to cite those. So check out the show notes if you're looking for additional information on any of the things that we talked about. So appreciate you listening. Like and subscribe. We had a lot of fun, and appreciate you joining us. We'll talk to y'all real soon. Goodbye.